So, tonight's topic is, as was last, tonight's topic, I give the same talks on Monday and Tuesday, so those of you that were here, were in Greenpoint yesterday, just maybe it'll sink deeper this time, I don't know. I'll try to say it using different words. So tonight's conversation is about conversations itself, having difficult ones, having difficult conversations, conversations where we anticipate that the other person will not appreciate or enjoy what we have to say. Often in life, such conversations are necessary. Sometimes we have them even when they're not necessary. More about that later. The idea is that in life, whether we're in a relationship that's causing strain or we're in a work situation or a living situation or a friendship situation where we don't like what's going on or how the other person is behaving or any number of events that are causing us discomfort, there comes a time in life where we feel the need to communicate our disapproval, our desire for change. And there are ways to do such conversations skillfully and ways to prepare skillfully. And then there are, of course, ways to have such conversations unskillfully and to prepare unskillfully. Unfortunately, we human beings tend to be somewhat programmed. Our default settings seem to be rather oppositional with other people when we have to have a difficult conversation. We feel like we're going into a kind of verbal combat, a debate, as you will. The idea being that we have to, as in a debate, we have to tailor all the facts as we see them to outnumber their facts so that we can score points. We can get the feeling that we've been vindicated, that our view of the world has been ratified, that our perceptions of things are seen to be correct. We want other people to acknowledge that their behavior has been violating what we consider to be the way things should be. So, of course, this kind of combative type of conversation rarely leads to effective change. It almost always leads to defensiveness on the part of one or both people. In general, when we prepare for such conversations, we do what I'll refer to as mental rehearsing. We'll sort of envision what we want to say, and then we'll sort of guess what they'll say in response, and then we'll sort of prepare for our counter-argument, which, of course, rarely goes as we plan it out over and over in our minds, sort of having like a mock trial in our heads. So this is what the Buddha called papancha, sort of trying to figure out what's going to happen in the future, try to prepare for it by envisioning it. Basically, what we do is lose track of what we're doing right now. We fall into this sort of obsessive mind pattern where we just basically argue with somebody who's not there in anticipation to goad ourselves into having this conversation, to make ourselves feel that we're ready. Another thing that goes terribly awry with this kind of approach is that we feel we need to get something off of our chest, which means there's an awareness that stress and tension has built up to the point where we can no longer contain it. It's moving up, and we want it to come out somehow through our mouths, expelled from the body through our mouths in the form of words that will bring awareness or discomfort to the person who's listening to it. So that's the general idea. We want to get something out by verbalizing it, which of course is somewhat better than getting out with our hands and our fists, but it's still what we're trying to do is actually impossible. You can't expel feelings through words. It doesn't work. We can acknowledge feelings with words, but we can't expel them. So you can't push out stress. That's not the way it works. So the long-term results are not good. The short-term, when we shout or get angry or we confront someone or we have a conversation where we can, you know, we get out all the laundry lists of misbehaviors and perceptions of being mistreated or whatever, the short-term result might be a sense of a release. Because what's happened is we're no longer in the built-up tension. We're now completely focused on their response. And for a little while, there's a sense of self-righteousness. But generally, what it follows the next day, a couple of days later, is a return of the stress in the body, the tension, and the obsessive thoughts about how we've been mistreated pop up again. And there's also, on top of it, additional dis-ease, a lack of ease that arises, a feeling of, shit, you know, both I let it all out and still I don't feel that great, and a sense of, like, well, what do I do now? You know, I thought that would work. It didn't work. I still feel kind of uncomfortable. So these are some of the sad results of combative conversation. Additionally, it really ingrains perceptions that are unskillful that will cause us suffering in the long term. The more we in our minds rehearse and prepare and argue with people, the more we get a sense that we are in competition with others, and that the only way we can get anyone to acknowledge any experience we've had is through forcing it upon them, that there's a sense that of being at odds with the world, of being perpetually a victim, of being, you know, there's a sense that we have to confront. That's the only way we'll get heard. So these are not perceptions that are particularly useful to ingrain in the mind, to say the least. Nor is the habit of trying to predict the future by rehearsing for it. That's not a good idea at all. That creates more suffering. So what's the alternative? Well, the Buddha and many of the teachers that I've studied with over the years propose a significantly different approach to having difficult conversations. And it goes back before we actually need the conversation to start off. It's really a fundamental practice throughout our life to develop inner awareness of what stress and tension has been building up in the body over time. Often what happens when we are angry or resentful with others or feel mistreated is that we've allowed tension to build up. We have lives that are busy. We don't particularly feel like we have a great safety net. We have a lot of financial pressures. We feel very much vulnerable in this stage of late capitalism. New York is not the least stressful place on the planet. Most jobs feel tenuous at best. So there's a lot of tension building up that has nothing to do with the particular interaction that is now obsessing us. There's already all this stress and tension that's building up, this feeling of being under the gun, of just barely, you know, keeping up, staying afloat. And so on top of all this stress and tension, then somebody will do something and it becomes the last straw, as it were. And we become overflowing with tension that we feel we need to get off our chest and expel outwards because we're so physically uncomfortable. So it's really important to constantly develop sati, mindfulness, which is as we are in difficult interactions all the time, rather than allowing ourselves to become totally fixated on how we believe we're being mistreated or misunderstood, to keep the mind partially aware on what's going on, especially in the areas we hold our tension. For instance, the belly, the jaw, the shoulders, the forehead. Just keep an eye relaxing these areas so that we're not allowing physical, what the Buddha called Vedana, to build up, create this underlying state of discomfort that pushes us more towards the outside world because we're uncomfortable inside. And then what happens is we wind up getting more aggravated by what people say and do. So we can keep our inner experience relaxed. We already are doing a lot to make it less likely that we'll need to, or we'll get pushed around or thrown off balance by remarks that are, we feel, unfair. At the very least, have a breath that's comfortable whenever we feel the beginnings of discomfort. Another thing is to open up to the feelings that are underlying our resentment. Many times when somebody does something that really bothers us, perhaps we get rejected, broken up with, you know, we feel we've been slighted, it's because there's been older, similar experiences in our lives where we haven't been treated well. And we haven't sat with those feelings and acknowledged them. So they're not fully released. They're still present. Any feeling that we haven't truly given our awareness to and sat with and acknowledged is still there, buried. And it waits for something in our experience today to open its pathway back up, to attach to. So if in our childhood or in our younger lives or in previous relationships we feel that we haven't been accepted or approved of, or acknowledged, or that we've been ignored, then anytime something in our present life re-triggers that experience, it will resonate. It's like it's plucking a very deep chord. And so it's important to separate the recent event, somebody saying something we don't like, or not being invited somewhere, from the older feelings that it's resonating with. We do this by, in our meditation, once we've developed a calm breath, we simply ask, okay, just not even going into the details of the story, just we say, okay, I feel rejected. What does this feel like? What's asking to be felt? And we just open to what's stored there. What does it feel like to be rejected or mistreated or hurt or not having our feelings taken into account? So we open up to what arises and we sit with it. We give it attention. We don't ignore it or run away from it like most of the times we run away from uncomfortable feelings. In this way we can disempower some of the emotional heft behind our resentments and our frustrations. So again, we relax the body, the tensions that are built up, and we open to older feelings. And then it's really important to find someone who's compassionate, but also spiritually wise to share about what we're feeling. The importance is that very often in life when we feel like we've been up against it, that we can feel that it's all about us. We can feel that we're the ones who are really, you know, that life is just unfair. And it's really important to be able to have someone to listen, because rather than so much as just safely expressing the feelings, beyond that, there's also, it's important to have somebody say to us, oh yeah, I've been through that. I know what that's like. Because the less we feel like we're going through these experiences alone, the less we'll feel cornered, the less reactive we'll become. That's really helpful. The more we know that we're not unique or isolated in our experience. So it's very important to share it with somebody who's wise and not a yes man who'll just go, oh yeah, that sucks. You should really tear a new asshole into that fuck. Fuck that, man. Unfortunately, there are yes men in all of our arsenals, and we really like them because they're uncomplicated and they ratify in the most unskillful. Sometimes the people who are a little more spiritually wise feel a little bit more difficult because they just don't second every lunatic idea we might have. But they're really invaluable. The Buddha said that's how you know a good friend, not just because they're there, not just because they are virtuous, but because they are willing to let you know when they think you're about to do something that's stupid. So we need that. Do not rehearse facts. We don't want to get to the position where we're hoping the facts are going to do all the work for us. Everybody has a different interpretation of what has occurred. You can argue facts endlessly by reframing the narrative. For instance, suppose I did something shitty to you on Friday, and you call me on it. You say, that thing you did on Friday, that was really shitty. Then all I need to say is, well, on Thursday, what you did was shitty, so I was just getting even with you, which accomplishes nothing. Or I can argue that you've misinterpreted the fact or whatever. Facts are greatly overrated. The worthiness of them is simply indicating the event so that the other person will know what event you're referring to. But what we really want to convey is not the facts. We want to convey what we've felt, what the feelings were that arose. So instead of on Friday when you said blah blah, you were a shit, which puts all the, it's we're trying to convey by attacking or being combative. Instead, we say, on Friday, I felt really like I wasn't taken into consideration by some of the things that you said, and I felt very much like you didn't care how I felt. I felt very alone in that conversation or without, you know, underappreciated. The more we focus on how we felt, the less we can be argued with. Nobody can argue with what I've felt. They can argue the facts forever, but they can't argue with what I've felt. Also, the entire energy is no longer me trying to get it out onto them. It's me again acknowledging my feelings. Not only with my spiritual friends, but now with the people that have caused, to some degree, caused me discomfort. So again, the focus is still on what I've experienced inside, not on an external thrust outwards. The more I say, I felt, and the less I said, you did, the less unskillful the conversation will be, and the more likely that at the end of the conversation I'll feel a sense of both relief and a sense of something's been accomplished. If I feel driven to have the conversation, I need to have it now, I can't wait. No, we can't wait. Then I'm not ready for it. I have to get to a place where I'm almost willing to not even have it. Because the more the energy and the drive is there to have the conversation, that's the same energy that's going to make me reactive. It's the same energy that's going to make me pounce the first moment somebody says something I disagree with. It's the same energy that's going to make me feel defensive and keep me overly externally focused without any internal awareness. I need to get to the point where I'm calm enough that I am open to different perspectives. And if I'm still driven to have that conversation, to get them to feel what I feel, to get it off my chest, then I'm not ready. I have to go back to steps one and two. I have to, again, relax the tension in my body, open to the feelings that are needing acknowledgement. It's when I am open enough to talk about it with a sense of calm, where I can listen to what someone else is saying, where I can be open to different interpretations, that's when I'm ready. It's equally important that I have skillful goals. The goal of simply wanting to get it off my chest, get my say, that's not a skillful goal for a combative conversation or challenging or difficult conversation. I can have my say and get it off my chest with someone who's a friend, who's a third party. But if I want to confront or have a difficult conversation with someone, the objectives have to be one out of two. The first, that I'm really trying to have some form of change in the relationship. That change is possible, that this conversation can have a useful result. As the Buddha said, all spiritual conversation should not only be true based on feelings, but it should be useful to the extent that it can have a good result. So it's either to lessen someone else's suffering, say I'm leaving a band or whatever, I don't know what the fuck, I'm not in any bands, but if I were, say I was leaving the band, I might have a difficult conversation, or I might say, yeah, I'm just not liking the music that we're playing, you know, it's a difficult conversation. I just say, I don't feel very comfortable with what we're playing, and that's fine. I'm trying to not just disappear and hurt people's feelings by suddenly not showing up. Skillful conversation. On the other hand, if I go on, you guys are shitty songwriters, you know, fuck this, I deserve a better band, you know. That's not a skillful goal. Just getting out the anger or resentment is not a skillful goal. Better to go to somebody who's not involved. Again, we'll only feel good about it in the long term if the goal or the intention was skillful, the Buddha said. That is what intentions are, what cause long-term peace of mind, skillful intentions. Those intentions have to be one of benevolence, not causing harm. So when we have these actual conversations, we do it when somebody's... these spiritual conversations... It's a very important, again, to keep the focus on what I felt. Just focus on that. Just bring up the external events in the most generic form without belaboring them and refocus on just what I experienced. Keep the focus on that. Nobody will be able to argue that. If they do, there's a real problem if they're arguing with what you experience. When you're done, if they try to interrupt you, just hold up a hand and say, I guarantee you I will not interrupt when I'm finished. When you finish, under no circumstances will I ever interrupt somebody when I'm having a challenging conversation. Because even if I disagree 100% with their perception, and even if while I've been focusing on my feelings, they're going on an assault on the facts as they've experienced them, and they're bombarding me with a litany of stuff. It's really important for the long-term skillfulness that I simply sit, focus on my breath, relax, and try to locate whatever feelings are behind whatever they're saying. If somebody says to me, "You're a schmuck, you never, return my phone calls," I might disagree that I never return their phone calls, but I can hear the feeling, which is they don't feel that I'm paying attention to them enough. And whether or not I feel those feelings are warranted, I can acknowledge that those are real, that's how they're feeling, and I can accept that they're in an uncomfortable place. It doesn't mean I'm obligated to change, nor are they, but at least there's been an exchange of what each person is going through internally. There's an acknowledgement that behind the disagreement, both people can see that there are feelings that they can understand. I can understand the other person's feelings of not being acknowledged. They might be able to understand my feelings of being too filled up that day, or whatever to call. You get the idea. We're undermining the combativeness. Then afterwards, I take some time to reflect on, again, whatever feelings I thought they were trying to convey. I let go of the facts and I just go to the feelings. And then, if there's something I can change, I will do it. I'll take it into consideration. But it's more often that I get a sense of connectedness rather than the combativeness that went into the conversation at the beginning when I focused on what the feelings are behind what they're saying. So this is the basic practice of spiritual conversations. It's a practice that requires not just waiting for a drama to develop, but throughout our lives, making the commitment to skillfully reduce our stress and our tension so that we're not overly reactive and easy to trigger. It's a commitment to open to our feelings and to sit with them, acknowledge even the most difficult feelings of loss and lack of acceptance, so that we don't find ourselves overly triggered by similar experiences. We've all known the person who goes out dating for 2 weeks with somebody. The person will break up with them, and then after this two-week relationship has come to an end, they're destroyed for months afterwards. Well, it's because they've had older feelings of rejection that they haven't acknowledged. We don't want to be that person. We want to have our emotions to be right-sized, and we have them right-sized by opening up to all of them, not just burying them until they come exploding out, given the slightest opportunity. So that's tonight's topic. I hope you got something from it. I thank you for listening. And now's your opportunity to share anything or ask anything that might be on your mind.